Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 4 of the Joshua Kuznick Experience. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the parent of all baseball podcasts. And joining me, of course, the man the show is named after and MLB-certified agent, Joshua Kuznick. Josh, how are you?
Envious of Mark Maron that my podcast will not be as popular as his.
Well, I think we're gunning for him, though. I mean, I saw Mark definitely. We're trying. You know, I think we're nipping at his heels.
Do you think we'll talk what happened yesterday?
No, but I'm just trying to hype up the episode and trying to give us a little bit.
My brain almost exploded seeing Mark Maron on the front page of CNN.com.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, right?
It's like, I think he doubled from 300 to 600,000 followers in a day. And if you follow his Twitter feed, all he does is just fight with random fans all the time. So I hope he has fun with the deluge that is coming right now.
That's amazing. I bet his phone literally like caught on fire just with all the new followers.
Well, the thing was, is he recorded the episode in the morning, and usually I guess they take a week to edit. He had that episode up in like an hour.
He's like, yeah, this might be popular.
Can you imagine? I would have given anything just to have seen his face, like when Obama said that word, just Maron, like, oh my God.
I am now a hero.
If they don't cancel his TV show, I promise you there'll be an episode of that next year.
Yeah. How could there not be? I mean, they might just keep that on the line just because of that. That's a ratings win.
Should be. But, yes, it's been quite busy lately for me. Yeah, so that's why I have not been able to catch up.
Yeah, that might be a good place to transition. So we're just, 12 days, 10 days away from the draft, just wrapped up.
Yes.
Let's start with, I guess you had a client that you were advising this year, and maybe...
I was, and he's signed now, and it's Justin Garcia of the Astros.
Okay. First of all, give us a little background on Justin Garcia.
26 home runs in 52 games in B2, was a finalist for the Tino Martinez Award. He left field first baseman, lefty-lefty, 6'3", 235, and project. I mean, he's very similar to a Mike Jacobs type, and if you dream a little bit, you know, he's left-handed version of Gabby Sanchez.
That's a pretty solid floor, anyways. That sounds like a pretty good prospect.
I like him. I like Justin a lot. I think he got screwed by the system for being a D2 guy. He got penalized for that. And the familiarity of him going to high school in Florida, going to JUCO in Florida, and then going to D2 in Florida, the same scouts evaluating him over and over again, and it probably wouldn't have hurt him too much if he got seen by a different set of eyes. But it really exposed a headache in the draft process and reinforces why I try to stay away from it. The first night I didn't pay attention to and got a couple phone calls about the next day, and then the next day in the morning, obviously the calls came. I was with the kid and his family, draft day, and the day goes by, and I'm like certain he's getting picked inside of 10, and the way the draft is structured, by round 7, teams are taking senior signs because they're out of money. So this kid would be better off going later on day 3 than going in the 10th round and taking 10 grand, and he ended up being the highest paid player from the Astros draft from 7 to 40. So, I mean, in the 17th round. So, you know, in baseball, that's something I think we still have to fix, that the round is irrelevant. It's the money that matters, which is, you know, that's how it should be, but it should also have some correlation to the round. I think we need to, you know, fix that in some respects, but I don't have an answer for you. And watching the kid fall out of day 2 was like, it was gut wrenching. I mean, it was a bad experience for the family, and you try to prep them as much as you can beforehand, but until you go through it, you don't really realize how agonizing it is. And I hated seeing it. I'm sure it was much, much worse for the family. But, you know, I told them, day 3, you know, today's Christmas, you know. You're going to get drafted, you're going to get signed, and you're going to go start your career. And lo and behold, today, as we're talking, his first game's tonight.
Well, that's pretty amazing. Let me take a half step back or two. And first, how did you get acquainted with Justin? How did that relationship come about? When did it start? You know, kind of, let's start from day one.
About a month before the draft, Carlos Osuahe, who went to college with him, asked if I'd be interested in doing the draft, even though I vehemently hate the draft. And I said, not really. And then I spoke to the kid, and I really, really liked him. And Carlos said he was a good player, so I went to go see him, and I liked him. And then the next day after he retained my services, he had 5 home runs, and I'm like, wow, I bought at the right time.
And, I am a genius.
he had 5 home runs in one day in a doubleheader. So, I mean, there was a lot of buzz about him going anywhere from 3 to 10, and I was pretty sure there were a couple teams I was going to bank on him going to, and it's really remarkable how he ended up in Houston, because Houston was the one team that literally never saw him play during a game. Literally, their area guy did not watch him play baseball this year. And then he went to their pre-draft workout and crushed. He was drafted based on that workout. And I was unsure whether or not I should send him to the workout or not. Eventually, because of scheduling, it worked out where I said it couldn't hurt. And he went to the workout. He ends up getting drafted by the team that didn't even see him play.
Then how did he end up at the workout in the first place? How did they have his name if they had never seen him?
Pure numbers, his number. I mean, you can't not invite a kid who had 26 home runs in 52 games.
Okay, so his area guy sees that those statistics, puts his name in there, and then he goes to a workout.
And he saw him last year, too, at Manatee Community College. So he knew who he was. He just hadn't seen him. The body improved. The bat improved. He only walked 5 times in JUCO. I think he walked 45 times this year. And, you know, there was this huge improvement from going undrafted to getting what he got. And the area guy just scheduling didn't work out. All the days he was supposed to see him, it was either rained out or he got sick or he got sent somewhere else. And it's a really good area scout. I mean, he's terrific. I've known him for years. And I give all the credit in the world to the Astros for having the balls to just take a guy based on a workout. I mean, that's a strong organizational conviction there to just be like, you know what? We didn't see him play, but we seen his history. Like, we didn't see him play this year, but we've seen him play before, and that workout was unbelievable, and you don't find raw power like that this late in the draft, so screw it, let's just take him. And they did.
Now, I want to take another step back if I can. Now, you were describing that the first night of the draft, you got a couple calls, but you weren't really expecting too much. More about the next day. What is day 2 like? Are you sitting with Justin all day long? What is kind of just start
yep,
from
that
whole day?
Sitting with the family all day long, listening to the draft like everybody else. And phone was ringing during the day, texting with area scouts, and, you know, just figuring out where the hell this kid's going. And I knew he wasn't going back to school. So at that point, I was essentially acting as an agent. And, you know, so there was no... It's not like I had to cover my tracks. Like, I knew he was signing no matter what, and I believe he was the first kid in the whole draft to sign, or agree to terms, which I've done that twice now, which I'm quite proud of. And really just on day 2, just asking the area guys who were so high on him, what is happening? And you start to realize on that day, like, the emperor's clothes gets to come off that day as you figure out what area guys have juice and which area guys don't have juice. And the teams that I thought he was destined to go to, those area guys were not in the draft room, so their hands were tied, and I believe them, and in their evaluations, I think they were honest with me, but ultimately, they don't have any juice to take the guy, and the Houston guy, the area guy, he drafted McCullers, he drafted Brett Phillips, and he was in the draft room, and he's got some juice. Charlie Gonzalez, who used to be with the Cardinals, is one of Luhnow's right-hand men, and he knew the kid, and it was just a kind of a good aligning of the stars that he ended up with Houston, which is a great organization for him to be with.
Now, why the 17th round? You get to day 3. Okay, I understand, you know, for those, I think everybody that's listening to this podcast for the most part understands a little bit that the draft is, you know, like you say, screwy. The last, I don't know, 100 picks on day 2 are mostly seniors, you know, saving money, like you said. Why did he last till the 17th round? What happened on day 3?
In retrospect, I was told by several scouts they were furious he didn't go earlier, but at some point, Houston finally just said, screw it, just take him. And they paid him beyond fairly. He earned what he got, and it was more money than almost every... I think it was more money than everybody got, from 7 to 40, and or at least tied for the most. And I don't know. The draft just works that way sometimes. You know, I said, I told him I was pretty sure he was going in the top 20 rounds. That's all I could guarantee him. Like, and I wasn't even guaranteeing that. You don't, anybody who knows, who says they know where you're going, unless you have a pre-draft deal, which aren't even allowed, you know, nobody knows where you're going to end up. So what's the difference between an 11th rounder, you know, who gets 10 grand versus a 17th rounder who gets eight times that much? So, you know, 8 to 10 times that much. I don't know. I mean, some of it's signability, some of it's money. I don't know. I'm glad the Astros took him. It's a good organization for him. Gets to stay in Florida for spring training. I like their player development quite a bit. And they do a good job. He ended up where he needed to, I guess. He's hitting cleanup tonight for Greenville. They skipped him out of the Gulf Coast League. We will see what happens tonight. The Odyssey begins.
Well, now, the next question I want to ask you is, you said that the team had no, besides the workout, had no real interaction with Justin. Did that give you more leverage in negotiations when he got taken and you were negotiating with Houston? Or how does that work, or how did that work?
Before the pick, they called and asked about a certain, you know, what's it going to take to sign this kid, and just came up with a number, and we both agreed on it, and then they took him.
Now, did that... It
was a 30-second negotiation.
Was that between rounds 16 and 17? Or I know, yep. Houston picked in the beginning. So that was when it happened.
First phone call I got from them was in the 15th round, and then that call came in the 16th round.
So did Justin know basically when pick 17, the 17th round is coming up, that he's getting picked?
Yes.
So that's when he knows at that point.
Yeah, we all knew before everybody else did by, like, 30 seconds.
You should have tipped me off. I could have looked really smart. I mean, I'm kidding, of course.
I tipped you off on one trade that no one gave you credit for, so that sucked.
Yeah, that was kind of... I did get really bummed about that, unfortunately. So
yeah, oh well. Right. I was right, though.
Yeah, that's true. You definitely were. So now what is your relationship now with Justin going forward? How do you help
him? I'm his agent now. Now I'm his agent. Now I deal with the team for him and work on endorsements, handle marketing, same thing I do for everybody else. And just happy to have him. And funny thing happened right after the draft, which was interesting. The Padres' sixth round pick is a Florida kid named Jordan Guerrero, and turns out he didn't have an agent. He hired me like the day after the draft.
That works.
Yeah, he had already signed, which I don't get any money out of it, which is fine, but, you know, I knew the kid. I mean, who he was, I didn't know him, but I heard enough good things about him where, you know, guy throws 98 and has decent makeup or good makeup. I'm going to throw that dart at the board, you know, any day of the week. I love the kid. He's been great with me, and got really lucky. Not many sixth-rounders don't have an agent this day and age.
Yeah, that's really surprising now that you say that. I mean, I feel like we go back a couple of podcasts and you said, man, these guys have agents by the time they're 15 years old, or advisors.
Yep. And then there's six-rounders that throw 23 innings and get drafted, you know, during 23 innings. And, you know, he got $200,000, and I think it was a below-slot deal. It had to be. And they saved some money, and he didn't have an agent. He saved some money, and he got taken in the sixth round. And afterwards, he didn't have an agent, and I spoke to him, and he just hired me on the spot. I told him to take his time. It was pretty funny. I'm like, take your time, talk to whoever you need to. You know, no rush for you. You know, whenever you want to make a decision, let me know. I'll meet up with you when you come home and golf. He's like, no, you're good people. I'm in. I'm like, all right, sweet.
Well, then how did you become acquainted with Jordan in the first place? How did that match up?
I mean, referral from another player.
Is that how all of your, you know, relationships come now? I know you say makeup is number one, two, three, and four when you're looking for a client.
Yeah, I mean, yes, but referrals are a lot of it. But, you know, I still go out and scout. I mean, I scout pro guys all the time, and if they don't have an agent or they're pissed off at their agent, I will certainly talk to them. And then 40-man guys are a whole different animal, because the whole set of rules you got to follow when you're talking to 40-man guys per the MLBPA, which I cannot talk about, but... you know, non-roster guys I can talk to, and, you know, talk to them all I want.
So now,
as can other agents talk to my clients.
Right. So then, now that you've gone through the draft process again, I know you had kind of taken a couple years off, what needs to change?
I really like the kid's makeup. And, I mean, seriously, 26 home runs in 52 games. You don't see that every day. So figured why not. And he's a terrific kid. I mean, he's an 80 makeup guy. And, you know, if it's not an 80 makeup guy, I'm not gonna jump back into the draft. It's just too much of a headache. And it can suck. Like, the process sucks leading up to it with all the pre-draft workouts and questionnaires and promises and, you know, all leading up to draft day, and then nothing coming to fruition and him falling out of day two. I mean, it's soul crushing. But, you know, now it's over. It doesn't matter. And he's a pro athlete. He's an Astro, and it doesn't matter where he got picked. It only matters what he does from here on out. And if he can translate that raw power into game power, which I think he should be able to do.
Well, then let me ask the question a different way, because that was I'm trying to get at. How would you change the draft now that you went through it again? How can it be improved, both for, you know, maybe the agent side, both from the player side, and maybe even MLB?
I have no idea. There are some area scouts that are really good. There are some who are terrible. There are some scouting directors who are good. There are some who are terrible. I mean, the whole process is just, it would be made so much easier if the NCAA just died and the kids could just hire an agent and this whole charade of amateurism would go away.
Yeah. Well, when does that happen? I mean, when?
Ed O'Bannon won his case. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I mean, there's still CBA rules that you have to follow, but, you know, who knows what happens in the next CBA. I for one, do not know. And, I don't know how to fix the draft. I mean, it's broken. You know, especially, like I said, when you have a kid who goes in the 17th round and he's making more than your 7th rounder, well, what does that say? Or, in Houston's case, from what I imagine, they had, what, the 3rd overall pick, 2nd overall pick?
2nd and 5th, yeah.
Okay, so they stay 2 and 5, and their 35th pick's going to get more money than both those guys.
Yeah. There is something fundamentally wrong with that. At least,
right.
At least intellectually, anyways, I should say.
Right, so their 3rd pick is going to make more money, in my opinion, than their 1st and 2nd.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Baseball's been like that since I've been in the business. I mean, I told you, I got a 30th rounder, $500,000 in 08, so I don't know what to tell you. I don't know how to fix the draft. It's broken, for sure. And I actually don't like that it's televised. That's annoying. And
why is that?
It really... It's just not made for television because these kids go into farm systems and you never hear from them again, some of them, or you don't hear from them for 4 or 5 years. And for every Mike Trout, you know, there's 400 other guys that never made it. And, you know, when you're going through the draft online, you know, on day two, they're showing video clips and everything's, you know, it's still cheery because you're a top 10 round guy. But then there's that psychological hurdle of day three when there's no video clips and they just say your name and, you don't, you know, you essentially feel like you don't care, and it's the first time that a kid really experiences that this is a business and it's not a game anymore. So it's tough. Like, it should be the happiest day of their lives because they go pro, but it's so stressful because you try to simplify it by saying just focus on what you can control and just remember, you know, all that's left to be determined is, you know, what team you're going to and how much money you're going to get, and that's it. And whatever happens, happens. And there's only so much you can do to prep for that. But it's not a pleasant experience. That's the reason I stepped away from it back in 10. But, you know, I had a couple guys in 13. I had a couple guys this year. And it's stressful, man. It sucked. It was a tough process. I'm glad it's over. And now I can treat Justin like a client. And now that he's a professional and not have to tiptoe around all these rules that are just so stupid. And I think Boris actually put it pretty well when, you know, saying an advisor can't talk to a team was akin to having a surgeon and not having him be able to perform surgery.
That's an interesting way to put it. I find it fascinating that in every other part of life, lawyers are absolutely essential in everything we do with any transaction. And yet somehow when we discuss baseball contracts with young men, all of a sudden they're not allowed to have them. It fascinates me. It's just there's something so wrong
like I said to you before, anyone can be a draft advisor, which is insane to me. You know, anyone can do it. You could have done it. So, you know, if you happen to have a friend of a friend who is going 1-1, you could have represented the 1st overall pick. that's the qualifications. There's no guidelines. So in a sense, there's still a wild, wild west where anyone feels like they can be an agent, go try it, which sucks because, you know, it's just, you know, people make the argument that I'm just trying to preserve the status quo because I'm already in. That's fair. But you also don't want to get a bunch of idiots trying to do this who don't know what they're doing. And that's what makes it difficult. And I'm glad the Players Association's cracking down on the certification rules, but still can't help with the draft.
Right, which, once again, is another huge problem and another huge loophole that they can't protect the people that are just about a day from becoming part of their organization or part of their clan to begin with.
Well, the Players Association only works for roster guys, so, you know, it is what it is.
That's a good point. Yeah, and that's a good distinction that I failed to make. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. So what else do we need to cover on the draft?
You know, it was really arduous and long, and I'm, you know, if I get somebody next year, that'd be awesome. If not, not going to worry about it too much. And you know, I'm just trying to make sure Justin does well and focus on all his stuff and getting him through the year and hopefully goes to Instruct. And then I can go to the winter meetings and talk to the Astros and see how he did based on his season, get a good idea going into spring training, and then just go from there. And then tonight is the Midwest League All-Star Game where I have a couple guys playing in it, so that's cool. All-Star Games are fun, but, you know, hopefully they get promoted after the game. And then, you know, just keep on trucking. You know, one of them's a kid, Carlos Leal, who's not playing tonight because he has a bruised knee, but he made the Midwest League All-Star Game, which, like we talked about, not bad for a 34th round D2 former pitcher as a catcher, and had a 9th round senior sign from last year who's pitching in the Midwest League All-Star Game tonight, Brian Hunter with the Reds, and 9th rounder, good dude, good pitcher, and has some really good numbers. And because of his age, I mean, he and I have talked about it before, he's got to be a fast track guy because he was a senior sign. So either he's going to make it the next couple of years or he's going home. So I like guys like that. And he seems to be doing really well. And it wouldn't shock me if he got promoted to high A this year, goes to double A next year, and then anything can happen.
One more question I just thought of. With Garcia going in the 17th round, and I'm just using him as an example. I know you've kind of alluded to the fact that maybe he got more than most 17th rounders would get, and I'm not trying to go there, but my point I'm trying to ask is, does he get as much leeway because he got a fair amount of money, or do they still look at him as a 17th round pick, and if he hurts his knee, he's gone?
No. The money's his insurance, and the fact that he got paid closer to tenth round money, he's going to be viewed as a. I mean, he's actually going to have more leeway than the senior sign, which is unfortunate for those guys. But, you know, that's not my problem until they hire me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the unfortunate thing. You see so many senior signs gets drafted this you know, couple of weeks ago, and now the next thing you know, next spring, they'll be just cut loose because, you know, they hurt themselves or they're just, you know, there's no spot for them.
Yeah, I mean, that's their insurance is going inside of 10. I mean, that's the senior signs insurance is going inside of the top 10 rounds. But, Justin won't be viewed as a 17th rounder. I mean, nobody who gets that kind of money is viewed in that regard. I know they paid their 12th rounder, six figures, Miles Straw, and I mean, he can play. And I promise you they're not going to view that kid as a, I'm not even sure his agent is, but they're not going to view that kid as just a guy. You know, the round is irrelevant. I mean, and go back to Silveron in 08. You know, he got $500,000 in the 30th round. You know, he was not viewed as a 30th rounder.
Yeah, exactly. They're babying him just like a second rounder, I would assume, yeah.
Or to make it more Nats friendly, Mr. Nieto getting 376 in the 5th round, which was like 3rd round money back then.
Yeah, that's well said. Good point. So.
Yeah, so, you know, the money is what dictates everything. They don't care what round you go in. I mean, I have a guy who's in the Texas League All-Star Game, Tyler White, who was a 34th round senior signed by the Astros 2 years ago, and now he's in Double A and
hit
on the verge of being in the big leagues. And, you know, Tyler was a senior sign, and he played great. He's a show-me guy. I mean, that's a phrase that we use in baseball. He's a show-me guy where every year he's got to put up numbers or else, you know, the rug could be pulled out from under him because he was a senior sign. But every year he's put up numbers. So they keep moving him and he keeps putting up numbers. So you got to keep moving him, and eventually those guys play in the big leagues.
Yeah, and he's hitting. Last I saw, he had a big-time OPS number a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I know his on-base percentage, before I cursed him by saying it out loud, like 3 weeks ago was at 501, and now it's 4-something. But it's, he walks more than he strikes out. He's a power guy, and he's really a terrific person, and got as good a shot as anybody of that I work for playing in the big leagues. Maybe with Houston, maybe not, but very good baseball player.
Yeah, definitely a name to remember, guys. Somebody off the prospect radar for sure.
Yeah, I'm surprised at that. I do know that when I was talking to the MLB.com writer, McTaggart, who was supposed to talk to Justin, he's supposed to do an interview with him about the draft and all that. He'd mentioned to me that Lunau had mentioned Tyler White as an off-the-radar prospect that the Astros really like. So I was like, wow, that was good to hear. Lunau knows who he is now.
Yeah, that's a good sign. That's good to hear.
Yeah, so when the general manager knows who your guy is, it's sort of like I remember in spring training talking to Paul B. Podesta about Seth Lugo, the 34th rounder, and you know the season that they were expecting out of him, and was like, wow, good, the assistant GM knows who he is. And that's always validating. That you don't, you know, for me at least, that I don't suck at scouting. So that's always good.
Well, and it's good that the Cardinals didn't delete him out of their files. Hey-o.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the thing I posted on Twitter about the, I love that show, Silicon Valley, on HBO.
Yeah.
And I made a little jab there. You know, if you're, the one character on the show said, if you're dumb enough to leave your password on a yellow post-it note, you know, when your competitors, the same room, you know, that's not even Darwinism, that's just barely social engineering. But
it is so, yeah, true.
If that's true that it was the same passwords,
it's just spectacular in so many ways.
I know a lot of the people involved in this, and I don't think they're that stupid. I'm just going to defend them with blindly that you don't get into those positions of power being dumb. And, I mean, maybe they could have, but my question is, who the hell uploaded those files and for what purpose?
Yeah, that's an even better question. I 100% agree.
Like, if it was somebody, literally, the only two possibilities I could think of were someone who had a grudge, you know, or an axe to grind with Lunau, or somebody who had access that was drunk one night, because apparently whoever did it from his house.
And that's what it's got to be. It is totally, I just think it's a drunken thing.
And like, I don't want to say that drunk, like, it was like, hey, watch this.
Yeah,
like,
I bet you I can do that. You know, yeah, exactly.
I mean, if I don't drink, but if I did, I mean, I could, oh my God. I mean, you know how much access I have? So
yeah, that would be kind of dangerous.
Well, I don't drink, so there's that. I want to chew on draft day, but but I don't drink anymore. You need to be sober when you're an agent at all times. I am a strong believer of that. You never know when someone's going to call at 2 a.m. and you know they're getting catfished, like we talked about. And the last time I drank to get drunk was like in 05 or 06. I was obliterated, and a player's mom called me on the West Coast at 2 a.m. and I walked her through a problem back in like 06 when I was drunk, and I'm like, never drinking again after that call.
Oh gosh, wow. Well, at least you learned your lesson the easy way, it sounds like.
He was a draft guy, and in retrospect it was with somebody who was just an awful person, so drunk or sober, I don't think my advice would have resonated either way.
Right. Well, that's nice.
And I'm talking about all-time worst makeup people I've ever worked for. And
wow.
Actually, I could probably mention him. He's a celebrity now. He was on Big Brother last year, Devin Shepherd.
Wow, that's the dude? Wow, that's amazing. I didn't know you worked for him.
Yeah, his mom called me really late while I was in college, and I was hammered, and I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. Call me in the morning. And I remember the call. I was sitting in my friend's car, and he's listening to me walk her through it. And my friend's like, how did you do that? I'm like, I have no idea. Just get me home.
Just autopilot.
And, but he was a god. He was difficult to work with. His mother was so nice to me and was such a great lady, and I haven't talked to them in years. I hope she's doing well. And the kid, though, was just refused to take good advice. And he got offered so much money out of high school in the fifth round, like double the slot like Nieto, if he went to college, and then he didn't listen to me. But I was junior college to go to, and then he fired me, and then he ended up getting like 30 or 40 grand out of the draft, and then was out of the Cardinal system in 2 years, and was an indie ball for a year or two, and then popped up on the radar last year as an actor in Hollywood. He was on Big Brother, and I was like, holy God, I can't believe Devin Shepard's on Big Brother.
Yeah, he showed you.
Yeah, he showed me. The 2006 Aflac All-American MVP ended up on Big Brother, while the guy he got two hits off of, Jeremy Jeffress, is my client in the big league. So
yeah,
he showed
gas.
Me.
Yeah, throwing gas at that.
Devin Shepard won the MVP. My guy got hit that game. So, I could be representing a guy on Big Brother instead of Mr. Jeffress.
Well, then you could actually be like a Hollywood agent, though, so you'd have that going for you.
Oh, I have no interest. I don't know if I've told you this, but I had an intern in college that worked for me who is still my friend, and he loves sports, big baseball fan. He actually made initial contact with several players for me, like Lorenzo Cain and Darren Ford and Clevenger. Like, he met them before I did, and I told him to go do it, but he made first contact with those guys while they were in JUCO back in, like, 04. And I had him working for me for 2 years, and he's now working in Hollywood, because after working in baseball with me for 2 years, he hated it so much he went to Hollywood. Like, Hollywood was a better option than working in baseball.
Yeah, that was what I was laughing about. I was like, that can't possibly be true. That's amazing.
No, really. He told me point blank. He's like, I don't want to hate sports the rest of my life. I'm going to Hollywood. And he's done really well. He worked for the company that that represented Gary Oldman and John Malkovich, so he's doing great.
Oh, well, good for him, even though we can't mention him. Good
yeah,
for him.
Yeah. And he's in Hollywood, so he's doing a good job. I still talk to him. He was at my wedding party in California a couple of years ago, and he was going to be on the reality show if it ever happened, and I'm still friends with him. He's still doing really well, but it's amazing that going through the baseball process turned him off so much that he was like, screw this, I'm going to Hollywood.
Wow. That's kind of awesome, though, in so many ways.
But I think we'll cut it short this week, and we'll just do the draft one, and then we'll do a follow-up next week on the family stuff, and we'll just leave it up so we can get this one posted, so we can just have a draft one, and then I'll do the family one, you know, tomorrow or the next day, whenever you're free.
I do have one more topic I'd like to ask, and maybe you can't answer
this. Yeah, absolutely.
But I do have, and we'll leave your family, like I said, because that's an entire podcast to itself. And,
yeah, that's going to be a whole podcast. We'll do that next week,
tomorrow,
or whenever.
And if you can't answer this, we'll cut it here, but did you have any thoughts on the Touki Toussaint trade over the weekend?
I do. He's a local kid. I saw him play in high school. That was an interesting trade.
And can you go any farther?
Is there something specific you'd like to ask me, for I will volunteer nothing?
Yeah, I guess my question is, are you surprised that we're now seeing players essentially traded like commodities? We saw it with Ryan Webb with the draft pick a few months ago, or maybe 6 weeks ago, whatever it was.
I remember that vividly, because that affected my client.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. And now we're seeing what essentially it looks like on the surface is selling a prospect, and their prospect from last year's draft, for essentially a sunk cost. Is that something?
Well,
go ahead. Yeah, please.
This administration, I don't believe, drafted Touki. Isn't it a new GM, new front office?
I think they had just gotten there like a couple of weeks before. I know Ray Montgomery's now gone. He wasn't there. I think La Russa was there, I think.
La Russa was there, but Dave Stewart wasn't there, so it wasn't his guy. So.
And I think Montgomery made the pick, if I remember correctly, and now he's in Milwaukee.
I'm sorry, who did?
Was it Ray Montgomery? I think he may have made the pick. But
yeah,
now
he's with the Brewers now.
Right, so that's a good point right off the bat.
So nobody's there, you know, that drafted him. I mean, La Russa's there, but, you know, he didn't have any installation. So, I mean, it just... either it was a salary dump, which it could be, or maybe they just didn't like the prospect, which I don't know enough about the situation, but, you know, they obviously didn't value the prospect enough to keep him around. I mean, they made him a salary dump. I mean, if they're in that kind of financial trouble, that's bad for baseball, but I don't think that's what it is. So maybe they just felt like getting the salary off the books was worth dumping a prospect on it. And you see that in the NBA a lot, and you see it sometimes in hockey, and you see it in the NFL, stuff like it, mostly in the NBA, though, I think. So, I mean, it's just baseball. It's not that common where you just throw in a blue chipper just to take a bad contract. But
and is that why this trade, is that why this is being so shocked and so panned around baseball? Is, I mean, we see it all the time in the NBA. You mentioned it. I mean, every trade, it seems like, is, you know, one team dumping a contract to get a better player or so forth. Is it that the fact that this just doesn't happen in baseball is why so many people are commenting on it?
I think it's just prospects are so unpredictable in baseball. Who the hell knows what 2B2Soft is going to end up being? He's, you know, personally, you never trade kids like that. You don't know what their ceiling is. Like, if I was running the club, but you don't know what they're going to be. You just have no idea. But if their conviction was that he wasn't going to be a guy, or they had an overriding salary concern, I can see why they would do that. But that's for the organization to decide, obviously. And if they felt like he wasn't going to be a vital part of their future and they didn't pick him and they can save some money and go spend it somewhere else, then they're going to go do what they did. But again, I think the stars had to align for that to happen, because you're talking about a first-round pick that they only had for a year, that the scouting director who took him is gone, the GM who was there who took him is gone, and he had no insulation. So to the team, in my opinion, what I perceive, to the ball club, that he was just another prospect. So they didn't care, and they could have traded somebody else, and it would have probably made less of an uproar, but obviously because it was a first rounder from a year ago, it makes it a big deal. But nobody knows what these kids are going to turn out into, and I think that's a little young to be giving up on a first round pick. But if they're convinced he's not a guy, I can see why they would make that trade, you know, and get something out of it. Or maybe they just needed to clear the money. I don't know. I wasn't in the room, but I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often, where teams, you know, say, take this contract off our books because they don't have a salary cap, you know, just take this prospect, you know. And I don't know. It just doesn't happen a lot in baseball. I think that's why it was shocking. But as an agent, if that happened to one of my guys, would I be surprised? Yes. Would it be shocking? No. Everything's drawn around money in baseball. So I don't even look at it as a sunk cost in a first-round pick, because, like I said, the way the administration is probably viewing it, like Dave Stewart, that wasn't his money. That wasn't his draft pick. So that's not a sunk cost for him. It's the only one it's a sunk cost for is the owner.
Yeah, that's a good point. And in some ways, he can turn it around. I just saved you $10 million. You know?
Right, exactly. So
pat me on the back kind of thing. Yeah. Although it seems strange when they just signed a $1.5 billion television deal. It seems strange that you're quibbling over $10 million, but still $10 million.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they needed it for budgetary reasons to go re-sign somebody. Maybe they wanted to put it into the draft. Maybe they want to trade for somebody. You don't know how this is going to play out. So, I mean, it's obviously good for the Braves. They bought really low on a high-end guy, but you know, we'll see. We'll see how it works out. If Pookie becomes a big leaguer, then it's a stupid trade. If he doesn't become a big leaguer, it's a nothing trade that we're all going to forget about.
Yeah, that's, and the truth of the matter is, there's probably a 80% chance that Arizona looks really smart in this deal 5 years down the road. All right, well, I guess with talking with a little bit of that, that was a good topic. Interesting to hear from an agent about the Toussaint trade. So I think it's time to get out of here, Josh. So where can people find you on Twitter? Where can they find you, email you, and all that good stuff?
You would almost argue it was an agent's take.
True.
Just kidding. No, I'm at Twitter, Joshua Kuznick, joshuakuznick@AOL.com, and my column at BT, which I'll be doing a draft article once I can figure out how best to format it, because it's either going to be a coin flip between what actually happened, or a draft journal. So we shall see.
Very cool. We're looking forward to that. Our podcast, has a Twitter. It's Josh Kuznick Podcast, or Josh Kuznick Pod, pardon me. And, check us out there. Until next time, hopefully in the next few days, we are out of here. If you don't have the dollars, you better get some sense.